The bump in the road hit by government formation talks has given front page prominence in the Irish Times. Deputy political editor Fiach Kelly reports that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar objected directly to Micheál Martin about attacks by his front bench on the government before Fine Gael released a statement accusing Fianna Fáil of damaging the government formation process. Senior Fine Gael figures are now suggesting that Mr Martin should publicly disassociate himself from comments made by TDs Barry Cowan and Thomas Byrne over government election contingency plans. Leap of faith, nation starts first day of new normal. That's the headline on the front of the Irish Independent. The paper tells us that as the first phase of easing the COVID-19 restrictions begins today, there's widespread nervousness amongst health officials that the spread of the virus could creep up again. Health Minister Simon Harris is quoted as saying, "We are not out of the danger zone." The paper also highlights fears that common drugs used for pain relief could scupper the temperature checks that firms are planning to introduce for staff. Ralph Regal reports on concerns that paracetamol and ibuprofen could hide a high temperature, one of the major red flags for the virus. In the Irish News, public health expert Dr. Gabriel Scally writes that the health of the whole island may depend on whether an all-Ireland approach is taken to COVID-19. Dr. Scally is calling for an investigation into the high number of cases in border counties and is critical of what he describes as the nonsensical plan to have 14 days isolation in the Republic and only 7 in Northern Ireland. Height of Madness is the lead headline in the Belfast Telegraph. The paper reports that around 40 revellers were removed by police after all-night parties were staged in a Belfast apartment complex at the weekend. The company which rents out the property said it was completely condemning any breach of social distancing regulations. The Irish Sun leads with a tribute from the wife of a hospital cleaner who died on the COVID-19 frontline. A cleaner, a husband and a hero is the headline there. The government is considering buying a number of the country's 19 main private hospitals and nationalising them in a bid to increase public bed capacity in the health system post-COVID-19. That's according to the Irish Examiner. Daniel McConnell's report says government plans to increase the number of hospitals under the Ireland 2040 Capital Development Project will, if suitable, include the purchase of existing private facilities rather than building new ones. A business leader has warned that one in every three small firms in Dublin city centre may not survive the pandemic. Richard Guiney, the CEO of Dublin Town, suggested to the Irish Daily Mail that pedestrianisation was a way of boosting trade. A photo of a graffiti-stained wall at Sky TV headquarters in Dublin features on the front page of the Irish Daily Star. The paper reports that a Gard investigation is underway after graffiti, which included the name of Daniel Kinahan and the MTK boxing organisation, was sprayed on the wall and footpath at Sky HQ over the weekend. A second series of Normal People could be on the way. Details are carried in the Irish Daily Mirror, which tells us that discussions have already begun between the BBC and author Sally Rooney. Also in the Mirror, a report that former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern is being tipped to appear in the next series of Dancing with the Stars. According to the article, the former Taoiseach has been busy bringing about a vote for independence in Papua New Guinea, but a stint in some glitter and tight pants might be on the cards.
The COVID-19 pandemic and global shutdown has led to an upsurge in drugs trafficking, according to the Lisbon-based Maritime Analysis Operations Centre. The centre, which targets drugs imports into Europe, says criminal gangs are taking advantage of a situation in which police forces are overstretched as a result of the pandemic. Former Garda Assistant Commissioner Michael O'Sullivan is director of the Maritime Analysis Operations Centre, and he joins us now. Very good morning to you, Michael O'Sullivan. Thanks for talking to us.
Morning,
what evidence? Morning. What evidence are you seeing for what you describe as this significant upsurge in drugs trafficking?
Well, I suppose, in a nutshell, the evidence is the level of seizures that have taken place. If you look at the overall perspective, there's a huge cocaine market in Europe. It's estimated to be 10 billion euros. There's a production increase in cocaine in South America, and now organized crime groups see a vulnerability, or perhaps even the idea that law enforcement agencies are distracted in Europe, so they look for, they're constantly looking for new opportunities, new ways of which to transport drugs under the radar, so to speak. And we have seen, certainly since the pandemic or the lockdown has commenced in around, let's say, mid-March, we have seen certainly an upsurge in vessels, and those are just the vessels being seized. A total of 7 vessels seized in several different parts of Europe or heading in the direction of Europe. particularly Spain, when you consider the pressure that the Guardia Civil are under and the various other law enforcement agencies. There were three vessels seized in the space of 3 days in April, which is really unheard of when you see that level of vessels coming with, and these are very, very large shipments. Any one shipment of these drugs wouldn't be seized, for example, in Ireland in the space of 5-6 years.
Right.
And so we're talking in total. Go on.
You also are pointing out that these gangs are very adaptable and they're not using perhaps the more traditional transport routes into major ports because there's a lot less traffic now and maybe they'd stand out more and there are more police monitoring those transport routes, but they are taking the opportunity to bring shipments into smaller ports where the surveillance isn't there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, look, they're far more innovative. Last November, we coordinated the seizure of a semi-submersible vessel off the coast of Galicia, which is basically a submarine. The organized crime groups are challenged at the moment because a lot of the container ports are closed or moving down to a trickle. The likes of Antwerp and Rotterdam, a lot of vessels are not sending the containerized traffic. Some ports in South America, in Brazil and in Colombia have been closed. But these people are putting it on their own vessels, non-containerized, 3-4 tons at a time. We're talking, the seizures are estimated to be about in excess of €500 million.
And what, Michael, about
just since March?
And what, Michael, about links to Ireland, the involvement of Irish gangs, and indeed the use of Ireland as a landfall for these shipments?
Yeah, well, Ireland is a big consumer base for the shipments of drugs. So there are some very important criminal groups who have international contacts and have had them for a number of years. And what really happens is various criminal groups pool the money into a consortium and a large load, let's say 3 to 4 tons of cocaine, is brought across on a vessel. It's coopered off the European coast, brought to a specific location, perhaps a warehouse, subdivided and quickly transported throughout the countries. Once it gets on land, it is almost impossible to seize that same quantity back. So in other words, upstream disruption is the only way to do it, to get to a vessel before it gets to land. And organized crime groups from Ireland and Germany and Italy, the Mafia in particular, are very much involved in these shipments. The object of the whole exercise, the whole enterprise, is buy in bulk and increase the profits, and the profits are massive.
Michael O'Sullivan, there we'll have to leave it. We could talk much more about this, and perhaps we will be able to come back to you at a future date, but for the moment we leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That was Michael O'Sullivan.
It's time for our first look at the business headlines this Monday morning. Petula Martin is with us. Hi, Petula.
Hi, Audrey. Good morning. As we've been hearing, it's a big day for business with thousands returning to work this morning. Shops and firms have introduced health and safety measures for their staff and customers as part of the National Return to Work Safely Protocol. The Health and Safety Authority will be able to carry out inspections of workplaces to ensure they comply. Ryanair has today reported a profit after tax of €1 billion for the year to the end of March, but it said it was unable to provide a forecast for the current year due to COVID-19. It's cut its annual passenger traffic target by a further 20%. Ryanair expects to post a loss of €200 million in the 3 months to the end of June. Concerns regarding members of the public travelling to holiday homes during the Easter break appear to be unfounded, with an 83% reduction in energy consumption in holiday homes over the Easter weekend when compared to the same time last year. That's according to the Savills Pinergy Energy Monitor. Energy consumption amongst families is up 12.4%, as many households see adult children moving home for the lockdown period. On the currencies, €1 buys 89.4 pence sterling and $1 8.2 cents.
100 days today since the general election, and talks on government formation between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens have been thrown off course somewhat by a row over the weekend between the two bigger parties. Fine Gael accused Fianna Fáil of damaging the talks process after the latter criticised contingency planning by the Minister for the Environment for a possible general election during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Taoiseach, Mr. Varadkar, and Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin are to be in contact today in an effort to defuse the row. Let's talk to our political correspondent, Micheál Lehane. Micheál, this is a row erupted Friday, Saturday. It looked like it was coming off the boil yesterday, but then Fine Gael issued this statement talking about damage to the talks process. What's going on?
Yeah, diplomacy looked to have won the day into the early part of yesterday. And those bitter words that had been issued by Fianna Fáil through Saturday, notably from Barry Cowan and Thomas Byrne, who are negotiators in those government formation talks, it looked to have been quelled somewhat as Simon Coveney, particularly speaking on The Week in Politics, offered assurances that Fine Gael were not planning a general election. On that same programme, Fianna Fáil's Dara O'Brien did describe what had happened as a leak, and he described it also as unhelpful. So just a few hours later, then there was that statement from Fine Gael, a very strong statement where it said what was happening in the Department of Planning, Housing and Local Government was required under the Constitution. Every scenario had to be prepared for, particularly if there was a by-election, a referendum, or even a general election. And they described as the comments from Fianna Fáil as unwarranted and crucially damaging to government formation talks. So that makes an expected meeting between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar today all the more pertinent and relevant. From the Fianna Fáil perspective, what you see here is a trust issue. They didn't know this work was underway, was being carried out by civil servants in the Custom House. From the Fine Gael perspective, they believe the comments were not in keeping with the kind of mutual respect that should be there, given that the parties have an outline of an agreement between them for entering government, even as it stands. I also think there was some lingering residue in the air in the aftermath of the combative approach Thomas Byrne had taken during the controversy and the political heat when that decision about not going ahead with the Leaving Cert was taken, and particularly comments he made at the time about the government's approach. That was all there. And there is a view within Fine Gael that as the talks now approach a crunch phase, that there has to be a more disciplined approach.
So the two leaders now stepping in, what might come of that? I mean, are we looking here at a bit of political theatre, or perhaps are, as you maybe you're suggesting, there are actually more fundamental problems here?
I think the fact that a huge amount of work has continued in the background, as I understand it, through the weekend on draft texts for those government formation talks, and that work was continuing. There were more than one, probably a few calls between the deputy leaders of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, that is Simon Coveney and Dara Cailleary, over the weekend as well on that front. There's a lot of progress, it seems, has been made with a view to getting those talks, or trying to at least have them intensify today. For all those reasons, you feel that the talks will step up a gear, mm-hmm. And that this particular episode will be got around. At the same time, there's no doubt that it is damaging, and that Fianna Fáil were spooked and Fine Gael were highly aggrieved. I think one of the points that Fine Gael is likely to make too, as I understand it, that many in government didn't themselves know that this work was underway. And indeed, I think it's possibly the case that Taoiseach didn't know about that election planning scenario story until Friday night. So therefore, the point may be made that they weren't able to tell Fianna Fáil about it, but there is no doubt that you can see the nerves that exist beneath the surface, I think, in both parties about the prospect of going into government, despite the fact now that you did see an agreement struck between them several weeks ago.
Yeah, so where are the talks then at? What's, assuming they do continue this week and over the next number of days, we've had issues, for example, justice, direct provision discussed. We had that briefing last week to the talks by Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue in relation to the government's fiscal position and the economic prospects for the period ahead. What's likely to be on the agenda for this week?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is a hope and an effort this week that actually points of agreement can be struck, and that certain chunks of text can be agreed that would then make their way in to a programme for government. That hasn't happened up to now. What's going to happen this morning is that there will be a focus on housing. So you're looking at things like, obviously, social housing, building that on public lands, cost rental models, and also affordable housing. They'll be the key issues this morning. Then there's a full plenary session in the afternoon to try and assess whatever progress has been made and to set the agenda for the remainder of the week. But there was optimism from all three parties, despite the other controversy and what was unfolding. There was optimism expressed that things will step up a gear this week.
Very good. Micheál Lehane, thank you very much indeed for that. Our political correspondent, Micheál Lehane.
Up to 100,000 construction workers will travel from all across the country to sites this morning. Hardware stores and garden stores will open their doors for the first time in 2 months. They'll be joined by IT shops, electrical stores, motor and bike repair shops. Small groups of up to four people, family or friends, can meet outdoors within 5k of home. Golf and tennis resumes, car parks, beaches, mountain walks all reopening, and schools and college buildings will reopen too to organise remote learning. All of this provided that the crucial social distancing of 2 metres can be maintained. And face coverings in public are recommended but not compulsory. But are the health authorities nervous about what this first phase of reopening Ireland might do to COVID-19 in the community? 10 more people's deaths were reported yesterday. 1,543 people have now lost their lives to COVID-19 and 64 new cases, leaving a total of just over 24,000. We are joined now by our correspondent, Orla O'Donnell. Orla, the R rate, the reproduction rate, it is estimated at 0.5. That's the number of people one person will infect with COVID. Are the health authorities saying essentially that a rise in that rate is inevitable once people start moving about a bit more?
Well, they're certainly nervous about it. Dr. Killian de Gascoon, who's the director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory, was speaking about this over the weekend. His view, he said it was likely that numbers could increase as people begin to move around. But he said that R number provided us with a bit of wriggle room because it has been driven so low at the moment. There is concern that if people jump ahead to a later phase in the restrictions easing in their heads and they start behaving as if they are in a later phase, in phase 3 or 4, then there could be problems. This was something mentioned by Professor Sam McConkie yesterday. The chief clinical officer of the HSE, Dr. Colm Henry, said that if compliance with measures were to disappear, that R number, the reproduction number, could rise very rapidly. And because of the incubation period of the disease, it would be 5 to 7 days really before we would know about the effect on the R number and the effect the easing of restrictions has had. And then he said it would be another 7 to 14 days before you could take measures to clamp down on any rise in the numbers and see if those measures are working. The Minister for Health said he was nervous. He urged caution, care and cop on. The head of the HSE, Paul Reid, urged people not to go backwards and not to undo everything that had already been achieved. And the message really is to try and stay within the restrictions, as you mentioned there, and to work from home if you can and stay at home as much as possible. And the HSE also announced new targets for its testing and tracing.
And we'll talk about those in a moment. But in relation to testing, Orla, we know that anyone with respiratory symptoms, new respiratory symptoms, should contact their GP immediately for testing. But from today, they're also going to test the contacts of a confirmed case, regardless of whether they have symptoms.
Yes, this was something welcomed by GP Matthew O'Toole on social media last night and other GPs. Close contacts, the HSE has issued advice to GPs that close contacts of confirmed cases should be tested twice on day 1 and day 7, whether or not they have symptoms. And this is because many people carrying the virus can be asymptomatic. Also in relation to contacts, the HSE said it's now actively managing the contacts of confirmed cases over 14 days from when they are first in contact with that confirmed case. So they'll get daily texts checking their health status and advising them to call their GP if they start having symptoms.
And in relation to the testing and the tracing system, we were told that that needed to be, you know, established in place before the easing of restrictions began. But is it fair to say that this entire system, as it is at this level, 100,000 a week plus the testing of close contacts, that hasn't been fully tested and trialled and known that it can be achieved?
Well, we heard last week, Audrey, that the entire process of testing could take around 5 days or more. The HSE said yesterday that the average turnaround was actually 4 days from swabbing to contact tracing. And it now has a target of 3 days. It says that it wants 90% of tests to be completed within 3 days. And it says it has the capacity to carry out 100,000 tests a week. There have certainly been delays. And obviously, to keep the reproduction number down, it's vital that the time taken from someone getting referred for testing to getting a positive test result and their contacts being traced is reduced to the shortest amount of time possible. I think everybody has heard anecdotes. The HSE itself has admitted that the people have been waiting a lot longer than 3 or 4 or even 5 days for test results. Now, they say that this is because they've had to build a testing system from scratch. They've described it as a wartime response. They spoke last week of issues like a lack of automation, hospital systems not talking to each other, but they say they have taken measures to address some of those issues. They mentioned a measure such as a Find My Test service that has been established through GPs for cases which they describe as having slipped through the net. And they said that that service began last Thursday. 80 cases came through that, and 85%, it says, were resolved within 24 hours. And the HSE says it's important for the public and for the HSE itself to know when things have gone wrong and what has gone wrong. It's also pointed out that 98%, almost 98% of people who are being tested at the moment get their results through, are testing negative, and those people are getting their results through an automated service.
Okay, Orla, for now, many thanks. Our correspondent, Orla O'Donnell. The shutters are going up, the doors are being unlocked, and the tills will eventually ring. That's the scene at hardware shops, garden centres, IT shops, electrical stores, motor and bike repair shops across the country this morning. But the shopping experience will be very different for both customers and staff. We can go live to Bray in County Wicklow now, where our reporter Angus Cox is at Woody's DIY store. Angus, what's happening there at the moment?
Good morning, Audrey. Well, all the Woodies across Ireland were set to open at 9 o'clock this morning. They had a variety of procedures in place to facilitate queuing. You would have seen these snake-like railings outside most stores that'd be more at home at a music festival than outside a DIY store. To facilitate the crowds coming in. So far, there aren't that many people here. They're not necessarily the queues that have been expected, but in the last few minutes, the first few customers have actually come through the door, because what Woodies have done is they've decided to bring forward that opening time to 7:30 at 12 of its bigger stores around the country, 12 of their 35 stores, just to stop queues building, facilitate people coming in a more orderly fashion. Now, as I say, here at the Bray outlet, not too busy so far, but we have had the first two customers in the door and they're pottering around the shop at the moment, where I have also been, and that's where I am at the moment, near the checkouts. And you can already see some of the changes in place. All the staff are wearing these face shields as a safety precaution. There's obviously the social distancing measures in place, something we're all very familiar with after getting a crash course in it over the last couple of months. And there's also going to be a very close focus on managing the customer flow to make sure there aren't build up in certain areas of customers. And for example, some of the more popular items we're expecting today will be among paint to be sold out. And there is also a paint mixing facility here in Woodies, but they've decided to close that because that would involve close contact between staff members and customers. So they've decided not to use that today, but that's something that will be monitored closely throughout the day to see how these measures work out and to make sure they aren't getting themselves into any sort of bottlenecks where people are in too close proximity to each other. I had a quick chat with Declan Ronayne. He's the Woodies chief executive a little while ago. He gave me a quick tour of the shop around the garden centre, where they've fully stocked up on all the latest and freshest plants for customers. And I asked him what was going to be busy. He was saying things like paint, obviously, people will be looking for. There's going to be pent-up demand for gardening items such as plants, and also other things like barbecues as the weather is getting that bit better. And also, hopefully now in the next hour, I'll have a chance to speak with some of the customers to get an idea of what they make of it all. But the first thing when you do come in the door, you get a sense there is very different shopping experience. I've also been told browsing isn't going to be encouraged, that customers will be advised to check what they're looking for, and they'll be asked what it is or what they're being looked for, and they'll be told to go kind of straight to it, but they won't be rushed around, but just to kind of make their way through the store in an orderly fashion. But hopefully in the next hour, Audrey, I'll have a bit more of a flavour of what's going on across the Woody stores, and especially here in Bray.
Well, we wish them all well and look forward to hearing from you again in the next hour. Angus, thank you very much. 7:39.
We were talking earlier about the contingency planning for a possible general election during the current COVID-19 pandemic. Talks between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens on government formation will resume today, against a backdrop, though, of that row between the two bigger parties over election plans. Fine Gael says officials in the Department of Housing, Planning and Local Government, headed, of course, by Fine Gael's Owen Murphy, were, quote, only doing their jobs by scenario planning for all eventualities. Well, is an election during the pandemic at all feasible? We can talk to Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, who lectures in law at Waterford Institute of Technology and has been taking a look at this. A very good morning to you, Jennifer, and thanks for talking to us this morning. So I suppose it's not something that's provided for in any existing laws or in our constitution, but obviously would present enormous practical difficulties, a pandemic general election.
Yeah, well, constitutionally, if there is no support for someone to be Taoiseach, then, you know, you have to go and go back to the people and see what we come up with. Legislatively speaking, the special difficulty order that people will probably remember from the previous general election, where a candidate passed away in Tipperary, that was that allowed for the minister to adapt or modify certain elements of the normal electoral law for any special difficulty. Of course, a pandemic is a massive special difficulty, mm-hmm. because you would have to do things like spacing out people who are voting. It may be a case that you might want people voting over 2 days instead of the normal one. But the thing is, you would be changing so many different things to allow for an election to happen during a pandemic. So, for example, nominations, you know, you might need to leave a longer gap for that. Mm-hmm. People who want to register to vote, they would need to go to a Garda station. You don't want groups of people congregating in a Garda station for these kind of things to be done, because people may have moved their address in the interim. For the backlog to build up in the Garda station, the biggest issue you would have would be, for example, with agents of candidates in count centres. So we saw at the Shannon count that it is possible to do a count with social distancing, but it would take a very long time to do that. But agents of candidates, you may not want people in the count centre, so how would they be able to operate for candidates to ensure that, say, the count process has been done correctly as well? And you wouldn't have any tallies either.
I suppose it's not a job for the department, the government department, Owen Murphy's department, but how might political parties canvass, get their message out? Knock on doors, presumably, would be very problematic during this sort of campaign.
Exactly, because you have people who are over, say, 70 or people with chronic conditions, and they're still saying that they really should be staying at home. So if you have people knocking on the door, you're bringing possibly an infection risk. I only work in electoral law. I'm not an epidemiologist, so I'm sure they would have particular insights on that one. But your traditional campaign would be out the window. If you're going to have people voting over a number of days, for the media, there's going to be a much longer moratorium, because you don't want people being influenced by different things on different days. So it would be very much a social media focused campaign, I would think, a very media focused campaign. And bear in mind, we don't have any electoral commission. We have well flagged issues around social media regulation for buying up, say, advertising. These things have not been fixed. So it would be a very open election for possible, you know, not necessarily political parties interfering, but maybe other agents getting involved in these things.
You mentioned postal votes. Is e-voting something that in the times that might be available could be looked at, or would that just not be practical?
Well, firstly, we'd have to find all the bits of the old electronic voting machines that have been broken up. So, no, that wouldn't be an option. And as well as that, Irish people don't really like electronic voting. We've seen that with the machines that were there that got mothballed and then eventually broken up. If you're looking between now and, say, maybe 4 or 6 weeks' time when there may be an election, I don't think the vast majority of people would trust, say, an internet-based system to vote, because it would just come in too fast. You know, people would rightly have questions where they'd want certain assurances on things, and I don't think you'd be able to do that in that period of time.
So it'll be the Pian Lui, and that'd present another issue, because we'd have to make sure to wipe it down as it's
or
passed
bring
from
our
hand
own.
To, or bring our own, yeah. Jennifer, look, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for taking time to talk to us. That was Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh from Waterford Institute of Technology. The time just coming up to 6:45.
And we've just been hearing, of course, throughout the morning that up to 100,000 construction workers are on their way to work again this morning. Sites across the country have reopened in this first phase. Builders, electricians, plumbers, carpenters, all leaving their homes and travelling hundreds of kilometres to pick up their tools once again. But is it safe? The government and the Construction Industry Federation say they have the protocols in place, but are they sufficiently rigorous to ensure that builders and subcontractors keep their workers safe from COVID-19? We are joined this morning by John Regan, SIPTU's construction sector organiser. John, thanks for joining us.
Morning, Audrey.
Construction workers use the term guinea pigs to describe their re-entry to the workforce. Are you worried about their health on sites?
Absolutely, yes. There's an absolute concern for workers to the point that SIPTU has a hotline, and if you don't mind, I'd like to read it out for workers if they want to contact us. It's 8588210.
So, and that's a Dublin number, 01.
01858810.
Because and the plan, John, says that it's outdoor work only, but many construction workers are they're working on the interior of new office blocks, hotels and factories, and they are under big pressure to return today. If they don't, they're worried they'll lose a lot of money, but understandably, they're very nervous. What's your advice to those construction subcontractors and the like who are under pressure to return to working inside buildings today?
First of all, social distancing and the safety of their employees are absolutely paramount in everything that happens on construction sites going forward. It is a different place of work as on from today onwards. The shutdown has brought about a requirement on the employers to remove risks. The hazards must be assessed and assessed on the day. It's not enough now to leave risks and monitor them for a period of time. They need to act on any complaint or hazard concern that workers put forward on building sites. So that's a whole new model, a whole new venture for employers.
But is that going to happen, John? Because many will... There are many, obviously, in the construction industry who follow the rules and the regulation, but there is a culture within it as well to not do that, to operate outside of the regulations. And are people, subcontractors in particular, and indeed others, who are relying on this work for their livelihoods, are they really going to put their heads up and risk their jobs?
Look, there is huge pressure here. It is a unique situation that we're in. There is workers and there is employers that have to work together. Trade unions have to work with employers. It's all safety driven. Workers have to elect representatives to represent them on COVID-19 on all sites. And the question of whether it's a big site with a lot of numbers on in employment, the number of how many reps will be required. They have to be constantly policing the guidelines and the protocol that is now in place. We are trying to get an agreement with the construction industry and we have a meeting today to try and advance that, which is going to cover some of the things that are obviously workers are apprehensive about today. We need to get an engagement to enhance the national protocol that is in place, that is very much a general document for all sectors of the economy.
But for the men who are returning to the sites today, this morning, yes, they're on their way now and they're there. One construction worker said to me yesterday, one subcontractor, that in the building that he and his men were working in, there was no ventilation. There were windows in the building, but they weren't able to be opened. They were sealed. And he was worried that if one of his team had a fall or got sick, that his insurers wouldn't pay because it's not safe for them to be there in the first place. And they're out then a ton of money. I mean, what should he do in that situation?
Look, I can't answer for insurance and for agreements with employers. What I can say about closed environments like anywhere else in any sector, not just construction, there has to be a system put in where the management, frontline management and the workers work out an arrangement that will allow them to take breaks. to move out from the enclosed area on a regular basis. It is common sense that that needs to happen. But will common sense prevail? I don't know the answers to that. That's why we're going to be very active, keeping an eye on how sites are performing. Sites that are not adequately manned and worker representatives and officers enforcing the COVID-19 regulations, we will be reporting them to the Health and Safety Authority, who are now very much fundamental to making sure that safe practices happen on construction sites and every other site. Equally, the HSA has to be adequately resourced. There needs to be more inspectors here. They are under-resourced and have been for some time. They now need to be fully backed up and more inspectors, because they are covering not just construction, but construction needs its own inspectorate. And this is fundamental to getting safety of workers and making sure that we don't have a fresh surge of the virus. Well, we do not need this happening.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, John Regan, SIPTU's construction sector organiser. And the Minister for Health, Simon Harris, will be with us on the programme after eight, answering these and many other of your questions on the phase one reopening of Ireland today. It's 10 to eight.
Petula is standing by with our business news this morning. Good morning, Petula.
Good morning, Brian. Chadwicks Group is one of the biggest builders suppliers in the country. It's reopening its 50 stores nationwide this morning. CEO of Chadwicks Group, Patrick Atkinson, has been visiting some of those stores this morning. Patrick, thanks for taking our call. What measures have you put in place to facilitate the reopening of these stores today?
Morning, Petula. We've done a huge amount of work over the last number of weeks to make sure that we have new protocols in place to protect both our colleagues and our customers coming in. So that includes social distancing measures, perspex screens, hand sanitising units, social distancing measurements, and we're restricting the number of people going into each of our stores as well. And the important part in all of this has been the training of our colleagues. We've spent many days bringing people back in, rotating them so they get used to the new protocols over the last couple of weeks. And they're all fired up and ready to go this morning.
And they had to take part in an e-learning programme to get ready for their return to work.
That's correct. Before any of our colleagues could come back to work this morning, they had to do an e-learning module and get a certification from our own Chadwicks system.
Are all of your staff back to work today?
All of the staff who can't work from home are back in this morning, yes.
Okay. And what cost was involved in introducing these measures and opening your doors again?
It was substantial because we've 50 locations around the country. We spent over €200,000 putting these measures in place.
Now, construction sites, as we've been hearing, they'll reopen this morning as well. They'll need the tools and products that Chadwick supplies. Do you expect to be busy today?
Yeah, I've been around to a couple of locations this morning. There's a steady stream of customers coming in and collecting some product. An awful lot of customers are phoning in their orders and they're coming and collecting because we've got allocated collection bays now so that they don't actually have to come into the store. A lot of them will have accounts with us, so they will put it on their account and just come and collect it.
Now, we heard that paint is likely to be the big seller at Woody's. What's likely to be the big seller at Chadwick's?
A wide variety of building materials across the board, to be honest with you. It's everything from timber and plasterboard and all these things that we sell every day.
Okay. Now, you said that doors are already open. Is that right?
They're open, yes, indeed, yeah.
Oh, what time did you open this morning?
So most of our locations are open by 7 o'clock. Some of them start a little bit earlier, around 6:30, but by 7 o'clock, everyone's open.
And have you extended opening hours in the coming days as part of the reopening?
No, we're keeping our normal hours for now. So it's 7 until 5. If we need to extend that and do a twilight shift as well to help pick and pack orders, we'll certainly do that. We're going to wait and see, Petula, what the demand is and how busy we are over the coming days and how we need to adjust our service for our customers to facilitate sites being open longer, for instance.
Do you have health and safety people in your stores to ensure compliance of the new protocols?
We do indeed. We always had a health and safety coordinator in every location. What we've done is we've retrained them and now they are compliance officers for our business. So because we had a strong culture of health and safety, this is an additional part of their role and an additional thing that our colleagues need to adjust to.
Well, CEO of Chadwicks Group, Patrick Atkinson, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Good luck to you and your staff and to everybody who returns to work this morning. I'll have more business news at 8:30.
Let's get the weather forecast for the day ahead. Linda Hughes is at Met Éireann. Morning, Linda.
Thanks, Audrey, and good morning from Met Éireann. Well, it's going to be quite a mix of weather this week. The first half of the week will be quite mild or warm, with many parts of the country seeing a good deal of dry weather. But then as we move towards the end of the week, it'll turn unsettled and cooler, and it's likely that we'll see some spells of wet and windy weather. This morning will be mostly cloudy with outbreaks of light rain and drizzle. These will become largely confined to Connacht, Ulster and North Leinster as the day goes on, with a few sunny intervals developing elsewhere by this evening. Top temperatures today will generally range between 14 and 18 degrees, but it'll be slightly cooler in the northwest and along the south coast, where the southwesterly breeze will be fresh at times. Tonight will be cloudy in most places, with mist and outbreaks of rain or drizzle in Connacht and Ulster. It'll be mostly dry in the south and east, with some clear intervals developing. Lowest temperatures 10 to 12 degrees. Tomorrow, Tuesday, will start off cloudy, with mist and outbreaks of rain or drizzle persisting in the west and north. During the afternoon, it'll become dry with sunny spells in most places, which will give us maximum temperatures of 17 to 22 degrees. It'll be a bit cooler near southern and western coasts, though. Wednesday will start off dry and sunny, but cloud will increase in the west during the afternoon, bringing outbreaks of rain to coastal parts of the west and southwest by evening. It'll be warm in most parts of the country with highs of 18 to 22 degrees, but it'll be a few degrees cooler in South Munster and South Leinster in a moderate southerly breeze. Rain will move eastwards across the country on Wednesday night, clearing from the northeast on Thursday morning. By Thursday afternoon, there will be dry and largely sunny conditions countrywide, but during the evening, cloud will thicken again in the southwest and west. Then for the rest of the week, it looks like we'll have more unsettled and cooler conditions, with wet and windy weather likely on Thursday night and Friday. And so to recap for today, mostly cloudy with outbreaks of light rain and drizzle mainly affecting Connacht, Ulster and North Leinster by this afternoon, highs of 14 to 18 degrees. And that's your latest forecast. Good morning.
It's 8 o'clock. You're listening to Morning Ireland on Monday, the 18th of May. The news at 8 is read now by Brian Jennings.
Several thousand businesses across the country are set to reopen today as part of the first phase of the lifting of COVID-19 restrictions. However, remote working is to continue for all workers or businesses that can do so. Our business editor, Will Goodbody.
After weeks of restrictions, today we'll see a return to work for outdoor workers, including those employed in construction as well as landscaping and gardening, hardware stores, garden centres, farmers markets, opticians and hearing aid testing services, along with those selling office products, electrical IT and phone equipment can also resume trade. Motor and bicycle repair outlets can also reopen their doors and vehicle and motorcycle sales can resume. However, on Friday, the government decided homeware shops, originally listed in phase one of the roadmap, may not reopen, a decision described by Retail Ireland as disappointing. The government says customers should restrict visits to stores that are reopening for essential supplies only, while social distancing requirements will continue to apply to all businesses resuming trade today. The Health and Safety Authority will be able to carry out inspections of workplaces to ensure they comply with the National Return to Work Safety Protocol. And although the gradual reopening starts here, the government says remote working is to continue for all workers or businesses that can currently do so.
Health authorities have urged people to be cautious and careful as the restrictions begin to be eased. There is concern the virus could begin spreading in the community again as more people begin moving about. Yesterday evening, the Department of Health said 10 more people had died from the virus, bringing the number of deaths to 1,543. There were 64 new confirmed coronavirus cases, with the total now standing at 24,112. Our correspondent Orla O'Donnell reports.
There is some nervousness about the effect the easing of restrictions will have on the spread of COVID-19. The HSE's chief clinical officer, Dr. Colm Henry, said the reproduction number of the virus could rise rapidly in certain circumstances and it would be a week before any effect could be seen. Dr. Killian de Gascoigne of the National Virus Reference Laboratory said the current low numbers gave the country some wriggle room, but the Minister for Health said he was nervous and the head of the HSE urged people not to undo everything achieved over the past few weeks. The number of new cases announced last night was the lowest since March the 16th, while numbers in hospital with confirmed cases of the virus have been falling. To keep the numbers low, the advice remains to stay at home as much as possible. Up to four people who don't live together will now be able to meet up outdoors, but exercise should still be within 5 kilometres of home. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, said hand washing, respiratory etiquette and physical distancing were more important than ever, and anyone with cold or flu symptoms should isolate at home and call their GP.
Northern Ireland is taking some steps towards easing its coronavirus restrictions today. They include the reopening of garden centres and recycling facilities. The Stormont executive is expected to announce further moves this afternoon. Italy is further easing its 10-week lockdown today. Subject to new health and safety regulations, shops, restaurants, bars and hairdressers are being allowed to open and church services can resume. The Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael leaders are set to meet today following a row between the parties over the weekend, which Fine Gael later described as damaging to government formation talks. Some 100 days on from the general election, those talks between three parties are set to resume this morning. Our political correspondent, Micheál Lehan.
The task of forming a government looks all the more challenging after those sharp exchanges between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in recent days. The origins of this row lie in preparations for the holding of elections during a pandemic, which are being drawn up in one government department. The news prompted an angry reaction from some Fianna Fáil TDs. But Fine Gael insisted that civil servants were simply doing work required under the constitution and the party was not planning an election. When Micheál Martin meets Leo Varadkar later, in a meeting that was arranged last Friday, the issues of trust and the need for a united, disciplined approach to the programme for government negotiations are likely to be high on the agenda. And those negotiations will continue today, with the Greens, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael set to discuss housing this morning before convening a plenary session this afternoon. A large amount of work on draft texts was completed over the weekend and all three parties have expressed confidence the talks will intensify from today.
The PSNI have launched a murder investigation after a man was shot dead in West Belfast last night. The local MP, Sinn Féin's Paul Maskey, has condemned those responsible and encouraged anyone with information to contact the police. Our Northern editor, Tommy Gorman.
Detective Chief Inspector Michelle Shaw said the PSNI received a report of an incident in the Lenadoon area of West Belfast at 10 p.m. When they went there, along with colleagues from the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, they discovered that a man had been shot. He was pronounced dead at the scene and a murder investigation was launched. Paul Maskey is the Sinn Féin MP for the area. He called the crime a brutal attack. He said there was anger as well as shock that such an incident would be carried out at a time when the community and the emergency services are facing the challenge of the COVID-19 pandemic. He urged anyone with information to bring it to the PSNI. Tommy Gorman, RTÉ News, Belfast.
Now the time is coming up to 6:30 past 8.
RTÉ Radio 1 weather with SuperValu. Home cooking is more important than ever lately, so get inspired with thousands of tasty recipes on supervalu.ie.
Mostly cloudy this morning with some patchy light rain or drizzle and mist. Later today, rain and drizzle will become largely confined to Connacht, Ulster and North Leinster, with a few sunny spells developing elsewhere by evening. Highest temperatures 14 to 18 degrees.
Leap of faith, nation starts first day of new normal. That's the headline in the front of the Irish Independent. The paper tells us that as the first phase of easing the COVID-19 restrictions begins today, there's widespread nervousness among health officials that the spread of the virus could creep up again. In its editorial, it says we must not forget that missteps, over-enthusiasm or any general failures to comply with the spirit and letter of the antivirus rules and recommendations can set the entire nation backwards. Let each of us hold on to that thought and there's a very good chance that further progress can be made. Height of Madness is the lead headline in the Belfast Telegraph. The paper reports that around 40 revellers were removed by police after all-night parties were staged in a Belfast apartment complex at the weekend. One eyewitness told the newspaper it was like a 7-floor nightclub. There was loud music and dancing. There's no way social distancing was being followed. In the Irish Times, Deputy Political Editor Fiach Kelly reports that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar objected directly to Micheál Martin about attacks by his front bench on the government. Senior Fine Gael figures are now suggesting that Mr Martin should publicly disassociate himself from comments made by TDs Barry Cowan and Thomas Byrne over election contingency plans. The paper also reports that dog walkers are set to be banned from parts of Bull Island and Dollymount Strand in North Dublin. Dublin City Council said dogs, particularly when let off the leash, were the primary cause of disturbance for wildlife in the nature reserve. In its action plan for the next 5 years, the council is proposing strict controls which would end access entirely to large parts of the island for dog owners and walkers in general. The government is considering buying a number of the country's private hospitals and nationalising them in a bid to increase public bed capacity in the health system post-COVID-19. That's according to the Irish Examiner. Daniel McConnell's report says government plans to increase the number of hospitals under the Ireland 2040 Capital Development Project will, if suitable, include the purchase of existing private facilities rather than building new ones. Several papers report that a bar in Buncrana, County Donegal, was forced to close its takeaway service after an intervention by Gardaí. Pints of Guinness were being delivered by car and even by bicycle on some occasions. Gardaí said an operation was put in place as a result of public complaints. Paddy Murray in The Independent suggests that the idea that those who frequent pubs will be happy to sit far apart without any interaction with bar staff or other customers shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what a pub is, what it's for and what it does. Murray is described under the article as an expert on pubs, having been a regular customer in many of them for the past 50 years. The Irish Daily Mirror reports that talks to determine the future of Dancing with the Stars will begin next month. The show's producer Larry Bass told the paper that even though another series has been commissioned by RTE, discussions will be needed to assess the impact of social distancing and whether the series can return at the start of next year. An explosive remnant of World War II was discovered in the bottom of a shipment of potatoes that had come in from France on Saturday. The Irish Daily Star gives an account of how shocked workers at a fruit and veg company in Old Town, County Dublin, discovered the device and had to call in the Army Bomb Disposal Unit. And several newspapers report that residents of Falcarra Community Hospital in County Donegal were given a surprise over the weekend when Daniel O'Donnell performed an impromptu concert in an effort to lift the spirits of the residents who hadn't had any visitors in months. Daniel peered through the window as he sang, and many residents could be seen inside with their arms in the air. In a message on Facebook, the hospital thanked the singer, saying words cannot express the joy you brought to the residents.
The first easing of the COVID-19 restrictions under the government's plan to reopen the country come into effect from today. Hardware stores, garden centres, farmers' markets will be among the businesses that can resume, as well as opticians, bicycle and motor repair, IT stores, electrical and office products, all the while maintaining social distancing. The plan also permits the phased return of outdoor workers, including those in construction. The Minister for Health, Simon Harris, has said the coming days need to be approached with care and caution. According to the latest figures last evening, a further 10 people with coronavirus have died, bringing the total here to 1,543. The number of confirmed cases increased by 64 yesterday. Minister Simon Harris joins here in studio. A very good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning,
we invited our listeners to submit questions for you today, and I'll come to those in just a moment. But first, we're taking today the first tentative steps towards reopening the country. The next stage, if all goes to plan, will be in 3 weeks' time. What needs to happen? What do you need to see over the next 3 weeks to ensure that we can maintain the easing that's taking place today and move to the next phase?
Yeah, look, today is an important day. I've said I'm both pleased and nervous. I'm pleased that we've gotten to this point because of the incredible efforts of the Irish people in suppressing this virus. I'm nervous because the virus hasn't gone away. There still isn't a vaccine. There's still people in our country getting very sick and there's still people dying every day. So we all need to now approach these next couple of weeks showing, I suppose, that collective sense of cop on. Just because somewhere is open doesn't mean we need to go. Just because we can go somewhere, it becomes more and more and more important that we practice social distancing, that we wash our hands, that we do our cough etiquette correctly, and that we stay at home except for the circumstances in which we can leave home. If we get these next 3 weeks right, though, what it means is this. It means as a country, we will have found a way of trying to live successfully and safely alongside the virus. We've seen very encouraging trends in relation to ICU admissions. Last month, there were 160 people in ICU on the 9th of April. Yesterday, there were 54. We only saw 64 new cases of the virus yesterday compared to 1,068 on the 15th of April. So we'll be watching all these figures. What do the ICU trends look like? The hospital admissions, the number of new cases, that crucial OR number. These are all things that Dr. Tony Hoolan's team will be monitoring. But it is in our hands. Every single person listening to this programme can play a role. If we don't get ahead of ourselves, go about our business in an appropriate and safe manner and practice that good public health advice, we can move forward with this plan and do more and more every couple of weeks and months.
The other key element is testing and tracing.
Yes.
Are we in a position today, because it's not perhaps clear from what the HSE was saying over the weekend, are we in a position today to say that yes, within a 72-hour period, this is the golden period, if you like, somebody can be tested and the process can be completed and their contacts traced?
Yes, so I mean, what the HSE have said is as of from this week, they expect to be able to do that within 90% of cases. That's a recognition that there could be a small number of cases where there's more complexity. We've stuck with testing and tracing when other countries have thrown in the towel when the going's gotten tough. The HSE has built up a really, really good system, but this is an area that's going to require constant vigilance, constant improvement, and we've got to keep working at it. So testing and tracing is a major, major focus for the HSE, and there's really good work being done.
Let me come to our listeners' questions. The first is from somebody who calls us to say, my wife and I are both 79 and are cocooning since the beginning of March in my Kerry family home. Their question is, can they return to their principal residence in Dublin, which they need to visit for a variety of reasons, and then go back to Kerry after a couple of days?
So the short answer is they definitely can't go back. So, I mean, and I know, look, this is the real challenge and pain of the virus, that people, you know, find themselves maybe, you know, having gone to visit relatives or gone to visit family and not being able to get back to where they need to. And I get that, and I get that the challenge. But the reality of the situation is we need people to keep within 5 kilometres of where they're currently residing to stop the spread of the virus. Now, of course, there are extenuating circumstances. Mm. If you need, for care reasons or medical reasons, to get back somewhere else, that's fully understandable, but you can't obviously move from one house and back again.
Because another question says, what permission guidance can government give a cocooner again who wants to get back to their own home having been stuck in another person's home since mid-March? This caller is 78 and desperate to get home.
So if you need to get back to your home, and in that circumstance it sounds like there could well be extenuating circumstances, you perhaps went to visit somebody, you now need to get back to your own home for a variety of reasons, perhaps including being close to your own doctor and your own health services, the advice there would be to make sure that whoever brings you home is already a close contact. And then obviously when you get at home, to stay at home. So again, we need to exercise a degree of common sense here. We're trying to ensure people don't move further than 5 kilometres from where they are, but there will always be a small number of cases where it'll be necessary to do so.
Right, and Gardaí have, if you're stopped by the Gardaí have discretion in those circumstances to allow you to complete your journey.
They do, and in fairness to the Gardaí, they've shown you know, a real engaging way of policing here. They're not there to try and catch anybody out. They're there to try and keep us safe.
Right, and the powers that they got to do this, those have been renewed by you, have they? They expired today?
Yes, last night I signed the statutory instruments, the regulations to extend those powers. So it does remain the law of the land that you need to stay within 5 kilometres of your home, except for the exceptions to that, which
is outlined. Is it the law of the land now that people coming into the country have to answer the questions that will be asked of them about where they're going to stay, and will they be isolating?
So we're working on the regulations to make that the case, and it is my hope that we'd be able to sign those regulations this week. As you come into our country today, you are expected to self-isolate. You are expected to fill out a passenger locator form and provide the contact details of where you're self-isolating. But I want to put that on a legal footing, and I'm hoping to be in a position to do that this week.
Right. Another question. Could you help me understand when I can drive to the sea, which is within 5 kilometres of my home?
From today. So beaches are now open again, and you can obviously take exercise within your 5 kilometres. So that to me sounds like a situation resolved from today. Obviously practice the social distancing when you get there.
Yeah, somebody else on the 5K question. Can you please explain the rationale for the 5 kilometre travel limit currently in operation? And the context of their query is that their golf club is about 17 kilometres from their home. Each of us, this caller says, could drive separately, change in the car park, play their round, then go home.
Yeah, look, I've gotten this a lot, so it's two parts to that question. I mean, one, why are we doing the 5 kilometres? Well, firstly, we've got to remember the virus isn't out there somewhere. The virus is potentially within us. And any time we leave our home, we run the risk of spreading the virus. So we're asking people to stay at home. But if they have to leave home for those limited reasons, to stay as close to home within 5 kilometres as possible. People often say, well, look, would it not be OK if I just did this or if I just did that? And I get it. On an individual level, that sounds like very little risk. The problem is if you do it, it means lots of other people are able to do it, and it increases a lot of risk.
But they're sitting in their car and they're wondering, you know, how can they spread the virus from the privacy of their own car?
But you do it for golf, and next people are going to say, well, the playground is 7 kilometres away, can I do it for that? And next people are going to say, would it be okay if we opened this shop and that shop? And it's the cumulative effect of all of that movement. Extra movement brings about extra risk. So what we're trying to do here is move in a slow and steady way. And remember, we hope if we get these 3 weeks right, Brian, that I'd be back here in 3 weeks saying it's now safe to move on and do another bit, and that the limit then would go from 5 kilometres to potentially 20.
On the same theme, can you address the question of when cemeteries will reopen? It seems unduly cruel, this caller says, to prevent people visiting the grave of a loved one.
Absolutely, it really does. So I did ask about the issue of cemeteries. So again, a cemetery is obviously an outdoor area. So we believe from a public health point of view, it would be perfectly safe to open cemeteries from today. Obviously, these are matters for individual local authorities. But again, there needs to be compassion and cop on shown here. I think cemeteries should be able to reopen. Obviously, it's very important when people go to the cemetery to practice the social distancing to keep the 2 meters.
And the five kilometre limit as well.
And the 5 kilometre, that does right. Still apply.
Please ask for further details on how many can attend small weddings after July 20th. Thanks. Small. I mean, what is a small wedding?
Look, I mean, I can only imagine people around the country. Indeed, I know a few of them. I was due to be a groomsman at a wedding not too far apart, and we had to remind the groom that he might have to move the wedding, and they've moved it into next year. So I know a lot of people are making decisions, big decisions, as they try to plan their weddings. At the moment, I can't give you this morning on Morning Ireland a specific number, but what I can say is this: we're going to work on guidance over the next couple of weeks so we can provide more information in relation to weddings. But if I'm really honest with you, when I talk to public health doctors now, I think it's highly unlikely that we'd be in a position where there'd be anything like 100 people being able to be at a wedding in July. It's likely to be a very, very small number of people. So look, we'll try and provide more guidance we'll put a number or certainly a range on it. A lot of it will depend on the behaviour of the virus, but I know this is causing a lot of angst for a lot of people planning their big day.
All right. Can you please seek clarity on reducing the restrictions for those cocooning those with underlying health conditions? When is that going to end? Because the plan doesn't actually specify, from my reading of it anyway, an end date for cocooning.
No, it's a fair point. But let's remember, so cocooning, which is a word I really don't like, but I mean the idea of giving people who are older or people who have vulnerable conditions, giving them a little bit more public health advice on how to protect themselves. This is not a legal requirement. It's our doctors sharing the best information with them. And that best information is if you're over 70 or have a medical underlying condition, you are best to stay at home. We've already, though, shown now that we recognise people need to take a bit of exercise. So we've provided more guidance on that. In the next phase of the plan in 3 weeks, if we get to this point, we'll be able to say to people who are cocooning, it's safe to go to some shops again, or it's safe to have a small number of people in to visit your home. So what you will see with cocooning is it will evolve as the virus evolves. So as we get this virus into a better place, we will be providing more and more guidance to older people as to how they can safely go about their lives. I've got to be honest, though, for as long as the virus is here with us, we are going to need to continue to make sure we do take extra measures to protect older people, because we know they are more susceptible to this virus.
May I ask you to confirm when you feel it will be possible to hug our grandchildren again? They're in Dublin, we're in Cork. We have been cocooning for the past 10 weeks. We've got quite a few questions along these lines.
Yeah, this question gets me every time. I think it's heartbreaking. It's gut-wrenching. It shows the cruelty of this virus. There are grandparents who haven't been able to hug their grandkids. There are also grandparents who haven't seen their newborn grandchildren, new babies who've been born since the start of this COVID-19 pandemic. And all I can say today is this: every stage of this plan allows a loosening of restrictions. If we can keep at this, the more we can move through the plan, the more people who can see each other. So I'll give you an example. So from today, if you happen to live close to your grandchildren, it's safe to take a walk with them with social distancing. In 3 weeks' time, if we can move forward, it's safe for people who are cocooning to have someone in to visit their home. The reason we can't say you can safely hug a grandchild is because that act of love could actually cause somebody to get very, very sick. So we'll continue to provide guidance on this, but it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, another questioner, my daughter has a small baby, is struggling with postnatal depression with no support for the last 2 months other than video calls. It's not enough. I beg the government to think about all our mental health at the moment and let us see our immediate family members. We're not looking for big parties, just our children.
Absolutely. And I mean, what I would say in that case, without knowing all of the details, is there is very, very clear guidance and rules in relation to people needing to visit someone for care needs. So if you have a loved one who requires care, and from the sense of that caller, that person might be on their own, you should absolutely be in a position to visit them. So, I mean, it is very clear that you can visit somebody for care needs, for medical needs. And if somebody needs that sort of support that it sounds that caller might, that should absolutely be able to happen.
On a slightly different tack, we run a bouncy castle hire company, and we're finding it difficult to get clarity on whether we fit into the categories of businesses that can start working again from today, from Monday the 18th. Can you answer that question?
Well, I reckon it's very hard to socially distance on a bouncy castle. So I mean, while the bouncy castle might be outside, I would imagine the active use in a bouncy castle wouldn't be compliant with keeping your 2 meters distance. Okay. So that is unfortunately a no for the moment.
Who does one ask for clarification if one doesn't fit into the named categories who can travel? I presume travel for work purposes. And this person cites, for example, inspections required for environmental law enforcement and monitoring.
So your employer, your employer in the first instance should be able to advise you. And if not, I think go to your line department or your regulator. But if you're not on the list, the likelihood is we do not expect you to be in a position to open today. I know the Department of Business, Enterprise and Innovation have been running a contact point for people with queries. And I'm sure that might be a useful place to check.
Can you ask the minister, why can we not continue doing kidney transplants in one of the private hospitals that are available here that are not yet needed for COVID patients? Northern Ireland, this caller says, have cleared a third of their transplant list. Her 33-year-old daughter is on the list here. Is it possible for her to travel north?
So yes, it is possible for people to travel outside the jurisdiction, but just to say for health reasons, but just to say this, I mean, what we're trying to do now, because the Irish people have gotten this virus into this place that we haven't had our hospitals overwhelmed, thank God, so far, we're obviously developing a non-COVID care plan. So how can we switch back on regular health services, and how can we use that extra capacity that we currently have to help with that? So Dr. Colm Henry, the chief doctor in the HSE, is leading on that plan, and I'd expect more details of that in the coming days.
And just on that, the Irish Examiner reporting this morning, Daniel McConnell, that the government is mulling over nationalising the private hospitals.
So the government has no plan to nationalise private hospitals, but obviously a future government could make decisions in relation to how it wants to develop elective hospitals. I haven't had a chance to read that story yet, but at the moment we obviously have the private hospital capacity rented effectively for the next number of months. There's a review period built in at the end of this month where we'll be deciding whether we require that further, and any future decisions will be decisions for the next government.
Can I just ask you finally about concerns around the construction sector, which returns to work today on a phased basis. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but does the relaxation in relation to construction include construction workers who are operating inside buildings? Because the plan refers specifically to outside workers.
Yeah, so look, this is an area again where I think people need to show a degree of common sense, because obviously all construction starts outdoors, and by the very nature of building, people end up indoors. So what there's been a huge amount of work undertaken between the Construction Industry Federation, government, employee representatives. So all construction sites can open from today, but the type of work that needs to take place on the construction sites needs to be appropriate to the public health guidance. So people need to be able to satisfy themselves that their workers can be kept safe, and workers need to be satisfied as well. We're not just taking the word of an employer in this regard. Every construction site, and indeed every business, needs to have a lead worker representative on this as well. So there will also be inspections, just to be very clear. So this is a big, big opportunity. We want the businesses that are open to be able to stay open. But that's only the case if people can comply with the public health guidance.
And construction workers who feel that they don't want to go back working in conditions which they may feel are a danger to them, can they stay away and still continue to get the payments, the COVID payments?
So obviously, if work is open and work is safe to go, people are expected to go to work. But there's very clear mechanisms in place between unions and employer representatives to ensure that workplaces are safe. And we're not, again, just taking the words of employers. We'll also be having a regulatory inspection framework led by the Health and Safety Authority, who can visit and inspect sites as well. So if anybody has any concerns, I would absolutely urge them to come forward and raise that through the mechanisms in place within their workplace. But to be clear, this is in the interest of business to get right too, because if they get this right, we want them to be able to stay open. But if they don't get it right, they will have to be shut down.
And what does a phased return to work mean? What's your understanding of what we'll see over the next number of days?
So I think
it looks like a lot of sites are hoping to get right back up and going full at it from
today.
Yeah,
but they're also going to have to do so in a manner that is safe. And I mean, I've certainly heard the construction industry talking about that might mean, for example, staggering shifts now that the weather is a bit better and the days are a bit longer. It might mean working a longer day and having fewer workers on site at a certain point in time. It has to mean things in relation to hand sanitization. It has to mean things in relation to social distancing as well. So good public health practice has to become the norm on construction sites if this is to work. Otherwise, people will get very sick and otherwise businesses won't be able to remain open, and we don't want that to be the case.
Minister for Health, Simon Harris, thank you very much for talking to us this morning here on Morning Ireland. The time, 8:31.
Yes, it's a big day for many businesses with thousands returning to work this morning. Shops and firms have introduced health and safety measures for their staff and customers as part of the National Return to Work Safely Protocol. It will be the role of the Health and Safety Authority to carry out inspections of workplaces to ensure they comply. Ryanair this morning reported a profit after tax of €1 billion for the year to the end of March. It said it was unable to provide a forecast for the current year due to COVID-19. It has cut its annual passenger traffic target by a further 20%. Ryanair expects to post a loss of €200 million in the 3 months to the end of June. Low-cost funding of €44 million is being made available to organisations like community centres and sports clubs from four banks: AIB, Bank of Ireland, Permanent TSB and Ulster Bank. The funding will be available through the Social Finance Foundation. On the currencies, €1 buys 89.4 pence sterling and $1 8.2 cents.
Let's hear from Didi Hamann. Of course, the Bundesliga returned at the weekend and Didi was working on it for television in Germany, and he's been telling me how he thought it went.
I think it was a small step in the right direction, hardly any incidents. The biggest talking point was a celebration of a goal from Hertha Berlin players. Celebrated that a second and the third goal a little bit over the top. They got to be close, and they a couple hooked each other. But apart from that, the players, the officials behaved impeccably. There were no fans outside the stadium. Couldn't have gone any better. But as I said, it's a small step. First weekend went really well.
Can you tell the fans here in this country about the emotional experience of what you saw at the weekend? Does this version of football, does it do much for you inside in terms of the emotional experience?
Well, I think when you talk about the emotional experience, of course, it's a different game and it's a different experience when you haven't got fans at the ground, because we all know sports, or especially professional sports, without fans is just not possible. At this moment in time, there's no alternative. The only way to resume and finish the season, hopefully, is to play behind closed doors. And in 2 weeks' time or in 6 months' time, things won't be any different. If you want to play with fans, you've got to wait at least till the 1st of September. And we have to live with the virus. We've got to try to contain it. Yes, it's different. It's not what we used to. I think we have to get used to it for the hope not too distant future.
Do you see this now as the way forward for sport behind closed doors, how it should be done? Or do you see it evolving a false crowd or maybe some noise being pumped into the stadium?
We showed the games here at Sky yesterday, and we had an option for the viewers to put a stadium atmosphere on. The feedback was brilliant. A lot of people liked it. So I think with the technology these days, it's possible to do that. But at the same time, people still have the option to watch it as it is, because a lot of people want to hear what people say or what players say. They want to hear what managers say. And obviously with an empty stadium, it gives you an opportunity to do that now. I think we never get used to playing without fans, but again, as I said, it's the only option at the moment. There's a first state in Germany. One of the ministers of the state said that he will allow fans at a sporting event as soon as September. You know, it won't be a full stadium with the distancing. You know, hopefully we've got the worst behind us.
And let's finish with our memory for this morning. It features Annalise Murphy, who overcame bitter disappointment at London 2012 to win silver in Rio 4 years later.
It's really hard. Finishing fourth is definitely the worst. Things just didn't work my way.
I'm going to work so hard for 2016 and hopefully I'll be able to come good then.
She's dealt with seasickness, polluted water and crazy weather in Rio, but nothing was going to get in the way of her Olympic medal this time.
The finish line, fifth place, Annelise Murphy. She's going to be overjoyed.
She knows.
Unbelievable.
It. I'm really happy. I don't know whether I'm laughing or crying.
Murphy magic, retribution in Rio. That silver medal, it's not made of silver. It's made of blood, guts, sweat, tears over the past 4 years.
Darren there, thank you very much indeed for that. And the lesson from that, I suppose, from Annelise is just never give up. Come back and try again and try again. And eventually you'll succeed. Thanks for that, Darren. And we are going to go to Belfast, where the Police Service of Northern Ireland has begun a murder investigation after a man was shot dead in the west of the city last night. Our Northern Editor Tommy Gorman can tell us more. Tommy, what's known about what happened?
Brian, details are sketchy, and in the circumstances where relatives have to be informed, it's a very sensitive time. But what we know is that at some stage before 10 o'clock last night in the Lenadoon area of West Belfast, the perpetrators went to where a man lived. They shot him dead. The police were alerted. They went there with the ambulance service. When they arrived, the medical people tried to work on the victim, but he was pronounced dead on the scene. The perpetrators had made their escape. We don't know the circumstances of it as yet, and we won't speculate about it until those details are confirmed by the PSNI. But it would seem it was a very deliberate attempt to kill the man. It has been condemned by the Sinn Féin MP for the area, Paul Maskey, who said it was a brutal attack. He also drew attention to the fact that it came at a time when so much resources within, say, the medical service and indeed within the police is dedicated to attempting to allay the worst effects of the pandemic crisis. Brian.
Very good, Tommy. Thank you indeed for that.
Well, the shutters are up and the doors unlocked, and very soon, probably at the moment, customers are making their way into some shops and stores across the country. But the shopping experience, as we know, in hardware shops, garden centres, IT shops and the like, will be very different for both customers and staff. We're going back to Bray in County Wicklow. Our reporter Angus Cox is at the Woody's DIY store there. Angus, what's it like now? Because an hour or so ago, it was quite quiet.
It was, Audrey. I think they had allowed for big queues to build. They had a big queuing system outside, and it wasn't needed as it happened in the end because the shops ended up opening at 7:30. And there was a steady trickle of customers through the doors at first, because they opened at 7:30 instead of 9 o'clock. In fact, a few people told me they heard it on Morning Ireland they were opening earlier, so they decided to come along. Customers have been greeted by staff outside to help guide them through the store to make sure they can find what they're looking for, and there's a bit more organisation to the whole thing. They can manage the customer flow well. And while there wasn't any sort of major queue, it has certainly picked up now. You can probably hear in the background it's bussing around. There are people knocking around where the paints are. Even the garden centre is getting quite busy. I'm joined here by Woody's CEO, Declan Ronayne. I'll be speaking with him shortly. But first, earlier I had a chat with some of those first customers as they were finding their way around this new retail normal, and we can hear from some of them now.
Because we were planning on coming later on, maybe when the crowds had died down, but we were on our way to work and we heard the news on RTE that it had opened earlier at 7:30. Yeah, we were literally on the N11 there on the way in, so we said, right, we'll try and pop in and see, can we grab it before work? So that's why we're here so early. Yeah, it doesn't look too bad. Like, there's plenty of markings anyway, and as you said, the hand sanitization stuff at the front of the door is a good idea. It seems to be lots of spacing out, and like that, kind of the main products seem to be at the door, so the likes of paint and stuff like that. So I think most people will be able to kind of grab what they need and go fairly quick.
Yeah, just to get some paint.
Yeah?
Yeah, badly needed.
We're looking forward to this. Were you waiting to get the paint for a while?
About 2 weeks, yeah. I bought the wrong paint 2 weeks before the shop closed, and I'm getting the proper stuff now. Well, to be honest, it's not. They had great procedures in the store before it closed down. I don't know why they shut down hardware stores, because it was very good. There was social distancing. There was no hand sanitizer, but they have it now.
Well, I'm actually with the retail park, so just we've been helping get the retailers ready to reopen and that. So it's great to see the stores reopening. I'm going to get some things for the garden. Yeah, the weather has been great, so I'm going to go out and get a few things and keep going with the kids in the garden. I think it's going to take a while for people to get used to, but the risk is too great to go back to the way it was. So I think it's going to take people a while, but you can see the amount of preparation that everyone has done here today, and everything has been very well thought out. Staff are very calm, and I think it's going to take a while for people to get used to it, but it'll be great.
The job is hateful at the end of it, it's painting a gate. So
you've been inside, you've seen it all now.
Yeah.
What do you make of it?
Well, it's. I wonder what it's going to be like when there's 500 people want to come in. Like me, I was probably one of about 10 people inside there. I was escorted. I was well treated. Shown what to do. And, loads of people outside. Is this going to be the carry on? That's the question mark. But up to now, it was a great experience.
That's the big question mark, I suppose, what it will be like when it does get that bit busier. I'm joined by Declan Ronayne, Woody's Chief Executive. Declan, we heard there from some of the customers, feedback fairly positive. Happy with how things are going to plan so far?
I think the critical thing, Angus, is that it goes safely. So our first and overwhelming priority is to run the business through the prism of colleague and customer safety. So we've invested, by the end of this month, we'll invest close to €500,000 in the Perspex screens, the face shields, the T-shirts you see all our colleagues wearing this morning, reminding people about 2 metres distance. And we just keep asking, what more can we do to our colleagues just to make sure that we create a really safe shopping environment? And initial customer feedback clearly is very positive about that. We're pleased about that.
And you've a very vast space here at Woody's here in Braes. I'm sure you do it most of your outlets. You have the big gardening centre outside, you have the paint in there to the left. Various measures, various signs in place. Some, I suppose, more strict than others. Staff being greeted outside, being asked where they're going to go. You have face shields for staff. Talk to me how those measures, you feel they are working out.
Well, I think there's two aspects to it. There's the physical part that we can all see, but then there's also the psychological part. So not only is it the physical stuff, but we've actually put all of our colleagues through an e-learning course on specific safety around COVID-19. So it's the mindset. And this isn't normal for customers. It's not normal for any of us. And people will naturally, they'll forget, or their natural human behaviour, get them inside 2 metres. So we need to get our own people into a mindset, which we're working really hard on, and that helps customers get into that mindset again, and we just need to be relentless about that.
Now, so far through the doors, the profile of customers, mostly people in ones and twos, adults. Initially, when Woody's was going to reopen, you said that under 16s wouldn't be allowed inside the store. You then reversed that decision, saying they would be allowed because there were a lot of concerns over single parent families, for example. Does that highlight the difficulty we're having in trying to get this right, get this health and safety aspect right?
Well, I'd go back to what that Irish guy who works in the WHO, Mike Ryan, said, is that, listen, you don't hang back, you make decisions quickly, you move on, you have no regrets, you're going to make mistakes. And we've put in hundreds of measures and decisions around running the business in a very different way, adapting to this new environment. And the idea that we get everything right is just, it's probably not valid. And we took a decision to say, listen, we probably need to discourage the family outing to stores. And I think we were probably a little bit heavy-handed in how we did that, and we put our hands up and say, you know, the feedback says, you know, that's probably the wrong approach to take, and we've reversed it and we move on.
And finally, and very briefly, Declan, from chatting with customers outside, they really want their paint, they want their plants. They're the sort of things we expect to sell in big volume in the near future.
We expect to sell quite a lot of everything. We don't think we're going to get an awful lot many more customers than normal, but we think they're going to spend a lot more, and we've seen that. Everyone's got a trolley and a basket this morning, not necessarily just popping in for one small thing. So we think we look forward to doing some good business.
Okay, Declan Ronayne, Chief Executive of Woody's, thank you very much. And that's all from me, Audrey, from Woody's here in Bray in County Wicklow. So starting to get very busy now, but an interesting day and indeed a few weeks ahead for shops such as Woody's and other DIY stores.
To be able to potter again around a shop. Angus, thank you very much. Angus Cox live there from Woody's in Bray in County Wicklow.
Golf clubs around the country are also reopening this morning under the easing from today of some of the COVID-19 restrictions. The first members to tee off at Sligo Golf Club at Ross's Point are among the 20% of the club's members who live within 5 kilometres of the course. While the course is open, the shop, clubhouse, locker rooms, bar and restaurant all remain closed. Our reporter Gail Conway is on the course this morning.
I'm here with County Sligo Golf Club General Manager David O'Donovan. It's slightly overcast, but the sun is trying to come out this morning. Now, David, what preparations have you had to do to ensure you could open this morning?
Good morning, Gail. I suppose first thing we had to do was get our golf course ready for the members to come back to. So our golf course has been closed for 2 months, as everybody knows, due to the coronavirus. So my greenkeeping team have been back in since 5 a.m. this morning and getting the golf course ready, getting the tees cut, the fairways cut, the greens cut, all for preparation for our members who are coming out this morning for their first time in 8 weeks. So we look forward to that.
Like you mentioned there, you are open just to members only, and about a fifth live locally. Are you fully booked today, and how's it looking for the week?
Yeah, basically our timesheet went live for today, last Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. and our championship course filled in 3 minutes and 7 seconds once it went live. So our championship course is full today. Our Bowmore, which is our 9-hole course, is probably about half full. There's a few spaces on it, but yeah, a percentage of our members live within the 5k, and I suppose, look, the key to it is they're coming out to play golf this morning and enjoy good weather and, you know, a nice bit of exercise, maintaining their social distancing, of course.
And how will the club be hit by not having overseas visitors this year? They usually account for, it's about 50-55% of your business.
Yeah, we've had a huge hit this year with the fact there's going to be no visitors here basically for the year, is what basically we budgeted for at this stage. The losses to the club are somewhere in the region of about €600,000. We rely now very heavily on our members, so our members now are going to have to basically foot the bill for the costs and keep us open for the year. So it's going to be a tough year. We've put plans in place to get us through the year, and you know, our American business, our European business, or all our international business is key to us. But now we have to rely on the Irish business. So once we're open for Irish visitors in phase three, we look forward to welcoming some Irish visitors here between now and the end of the year, and hopefully that will help help us get through the year safely.
Stephen, is there any jobs around the place here that you managed to get done while it was closed?
Well, I don't know there's too many advantages of being closed, but I suppose what we did take advantage of, the fact that the car park was empty for the first time in 15 years, so we managed to get the lines all painted. These were all done by member volunteers who came to us after we were closed for the first 2 weeks and said, is there anything that we can help out with? So some of the jobs that were taken on, the hedges were cut, the car park was painted, the clubhouse was painted, or sorry, the car park lines were painted rather than the car park, the clubhouse was painted, and a number of different jobs on the golf course, the likes of all the benches, the seats, the bins, were all painted by member volunteers. So we thank them for their commitment to the club, and they realise it's their club, it's a members club, and they all kind of pulled together and said, look, we need to help you get through this, and that's what they've done, and you know, we've been very lucky that way.
So first to tee off this morning are David Dunn and Tom Ford. So Dave, we'll come to you first. How much have you missed golfing, and how much do you plan on getting out on the course this week and in the coming weeks, I suppose, to make up for last time?
I suppose over the last number of weeks we've missed a lot of things, and golf is one of those things. This is a small community here in Ross's Point, where we're surrounded by the beach and the golf course. It's the heartbeat of our community, and today it's a great day to be back on the golf course and be able to go into the beach and have a swim if we wanted to, so it's all good.
And Tom, how do you think other members will be feeling about not being able to get back on the course if they don't live within the 5 kilometre radius?
That's a good question. I just feel that the pandemic is so serious that people have to, we've got very clear advice, and I think we've been very lucky with how it's been handled. So we just have to stick with it. Unfortunately, there'll be some people who are just lucky enough to live within the 5K, and other people it'll be 3 weeks' time, and we just have to follow the advice and do our best.
And will there be some healthy competition this morning to see who'll get the best score today?
There definitely will. We're three good friends. We've played a lot of golf together, and we're just lucky to have the opportunity to get back out. Really looking forward to the camaraderie, but also there'll be no doubt a few side bets.
Okay, well, enjoy your round this morning, and there go the first three members teeing off under the new COVID-19 exit plan measures.
And that report from the County Sligo Golf Club at Ross's Point from Gail Conway. 3 minutes and 7 seconds for their championship course to book out when they opened bookings last week. That's quite extraordinary. 1:09.